The Brad Sesmatch Show, broadcasting live.
Thanks for being with us. We will have Jordan Hamm in Tucson. He is there for spring football workouts. I wanted to have Jordan on. He was at Arizona State yesterday. The transfer portal is wide open in college football. And I want to get Jordy's view on both U of A and ASU at the portal and what's going on in spring ball with both schools. So we'll have that. John Cantara is going to be with us shortly, the coach, because one of the best stories in sports is what is going on over in San Diego with the Padres. Even though the Diamondbacks are playing well, they're winning again today. I want to start focusing a little bit further on the National League West. I saw a note today from the great Bob Nightingale, who said that any of the top four teams that are in the National League West, if they're in any other division, they'd be in first place. It's pretty good, but the Padres are there right now. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. As always and through the years, that's Desert Financial Credit Union. We do appreciate Jeff Michi and their support. The Suns are going to have a media availability this morning at 11 a.m., at which time Matt Ishbia and James Jones are going to speak. I am doubting there'll be anything newsworthy, noteworthy out of there other than the usual, we're committed to winning and all of that. I don't care if Stephen A. Smith said that Matt Ishbia is the worst owner in the NBA. That just feeds into the social media frenzy. What is fact, not what is clickbait, okay? What is fact? Hey, Matt, have you closed the door on Kevin Durant returning to Phoenix? Why, no, we're open to anything. We'd love to have Kevin here. Hey, Matt, are you going to trade Devin Booker? Why would we trade our most valuable player who's in the prime of his career? We want to build around Devin. Oh, so you were saying that you want to go through this with Devin come hell or high water. Because, this is just me now, if they don't play well the start of next season and we get to the trade deadline next February, and yeah, they have the option this summer of doing something with Booker's contract, but anytime that I hear these press deals nowadays, most of the time the owners say nothing. Most of the time they're prepped on, you're going to get asked this, 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 and this. That's why Ishbia hasn't said anything the last 4 days. Throw a temperature in the air, see what is being talked about, what is being written about, make sure you're all prepped, so on and so forth. I trust James Jones. Really, do you going to consider Isaiah Thomas and Tom Izzo? I'm going to talk to all my... It's going to be that. Short of him saying, I screwed up, I am the worst owner, and there's nothing to worry about with the mortgage industry and my financial having this NBA franchise right now, and the mortgage industry is not doing great. Short of that, or short of him having Kevin Durant walk through the door, which I highly doubt will happen, saying we're going nowhere with Kevin, he's staying here, which that's not going to happen. If he says, yeah, this thing was a complete failure and we are going to trade Kevin, that would be interesting. I am doubting that they're going to say that today. Why would you take your leverage out? If there's this long, heartfelt, I'm sorry, very seldom do you hear owners say they're sorry. Ken Kendrick did it last year with the signing of Jordan Montgomery, and it was well received, I might add. But you're never going to hear the owner of the pro football team say that they ever did anything wrong or they're sorry. You're not going to hear, in my view, owners that have been widely successful in other areas, you're not going to hear them say, I screwed up. They don't believe that they should say that. In terms of the coach, Steve Nash is going to sign with Amazon. So I know that these media companies need to get their click counts up. It all reads like a great headline, but come on, guys. Like, be better. It's just not that hard. It's been out there. Could he return to coaching? Oh, I'm sure if they said, hey, look, we're paying three coaches right now. You'll be the fourth, and here's the largest contract in the history of the NBA. Steve would probably say, you know, I'm too well to attend being on television. But he's going to Amazon. There. God. Lee Corso retired today. I'm actually going to talk to John Cantara about this because Coach, as I'm sure, is a big fan of Lee. And Lee Corso has been a staple part of ESPN through the years. I have wanted Lee Corso to retire for about 3 years now. It has felt forced at times with ESPN. It has felt forced, and they can say all they want, it's their show, but I find my way over to the remote control when it is time for the Corso segment. The Brutus on the Head was very funny for many, 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 many years. Not so funny now. So this is, to me, welcome news. And I would think that his last broadcast appearance will be when Ohio State plays in their home opener, and that ESPN will grab that, and that'll be Lee Corso's goodbye. The Cardinals held their draft. The Cardinals held their draft availability. If you want to talk about one of the all-time worst wastes of time spent, it's sitting at an NFL general manager coach availability a week before the draft. Like, I just wish there was a BS meter, or just the evasiveness of answering the question. And people try to be honest. I'm not ripping on Monty or Jonathan Gannon. It's just, it's the same old story. There's nothing there. There's nothing there. Oh, well, he said this and he said that. And it never happens. It's a lying season. That's what it is. The draft is a week from today. If I'm the Arizona Cardinals and I look at my roster and I look at my most valued commodity, which is the quarterback, and I see the areas that I've improved on here in the offseason, I myself would try to add more on the offensive side of the football for him to utilize. I would. Yeah, they did that last year with Marvin Harrison Jr., but I'm of the side of the street of, you guys could do more than that to help him out. The Hometown Nine, they're playing right now down in Miami, and they're winning once again, and they're playing very, very well. Eduardo Rodriguez has been typical Eduardo Rodriguez early on today. So watching them last night, pitching's been very good. I think the spring training hangover, like the first 2 weeks of the Major League Baseball season, has now become the NBA from October 30th through about 1st of February. Just like the first few weeks are just, it's like NFL football in September. It's not even the same game when we get to September. Just isn't. All right, the coach, John Cantara, and Jordan Hamm, they are both straight ahead. We'll chop it up with Coach next. All right, as promised, the legendary coach, John Cantara, with us for a few minutes. It is good to see you. There's a lot going on. Let's just get right into, is this real in San Diego with the Padres? Our buddy Bob Nightingale wrote today, I'm sure you saw it, John, that the top four teams in the National League West would all be in first place in every other division. That's how good the National League West is
today. Well, I think the big question on this, Brad, is who's going to rise to the occasion. I mean, we knew going in the Dodgers were the favorite for a variety of reasons. Number one, talent-wise. Number two, I think depth. Over 162 games, they're probably the one organization that can hold up better than the other three right now. But Arizona, I actually picked the Diamondbacks to finish second. I actually picked the Padres to finish third, and I figured the Giants would be better, but I figured they weren't going to really be in it. They may be in it till the trading deadline, but they'd probably finish in fourth. And then our old buddy, Buddy Black, obviously was going to come in the basement with the Colorado Rockies. But, Padres and Dodgers and Giants have gotten off to a great start. Diamondbacks were kind of scuffling, but it looks like they've starting to turn the corner. And they got good starting pitching, and they've got some guys that can bop the ball. And nice to see Corbin Carroll get off to a good start after that miserable first half he had last year. But this division is fantastic, and they're going to take turns beating up one another, I think.
Yeah, what has gone right for the Padres from your view? Because I think last year, maybe I was on your show about this, there was some skepticism about changing out the manager from Bob Melvin. And we saw how the season went. Now this year, they get off to this amazing start. I mean, what has gone right for the Padres to put them in this spot, John, just over the last year and a half?
Well, I think and I think a lot of people that maybe aren't close to the situation here in San Diego, I think trading Juan Soto prior to last year, addition by subtraction. I think he never really bought into being a San Diego Padre in the year and a half he was here. He was late for buses that I think kind of irritated some of the veterans on the ball club. He just kind of went to his own beat of a drum. He didn't want to sit down with Bob Melvin and have a conversation unless there was an agent. Of course, he's represented by Scott Boras, and he's got a bunch of his lieutenants that would be sitting in San Diego all the time. So that, you know, addition by subtraction, I think, helped. I think Mike Schilt came in. And really, at the end of the day, you got a veteran like Manny Machado, Xander Bogaerts, guys that have been there, done that. Manny's never won a ring. He had a chance that one year with the Dodgers, came up short. Bogaerts has got a couple of rings. These guys want to win. They're high-character guys, good mental makeup. And Mike Schilt, coming from the background with the Cardinal organization, where he learned a lot of baseball from George Kissel, who was a great guy down in the minor leagues developing ball players. He understands the fundamentals of the game. Padres are playing good old school baseball right now. They're not striking out. They're putting the ball in play. And a lot of that started, Brad, a year ago with Victor Rodriguez, who they brought over from the Cleveland organization. And they're just trying to hit line drives. The ball goes out of the ballpark. Great, it goes out of the ballpark. But they're putting the ball in play. They're moving runners up. They're bunting. They're running. And fundamentally, they've been a very, very good team. And a lot like for many years, you and I, growing up as kids, watched the St. Louis Cardinals, where they were fundamentally sound. Mike Schilt's got these guys buying into that theory, and right now they're sitting at 15-4 on an off day.
When Machado came to the Padres, there was this national thing about, is this going to be a good fit? Is it a big enough market, right? Am I remembering all that correctly? Like, this was not overwhelming. This is amazing. This is the best move that's ever happened in San Diego. Am I remembering this correctly, John, or am I getting old?
Well, no. You know, at that time, there were two key free agents that year. They were Bryce Harper, who was a free agent from Washington, and Manny Machado, who had been traded during the year from Baltimore to the Dodgers. And the Dodgers, you know, kind of had Manny there, really didn't like what they saw out of Manny. I don't know if he didn't jive with the guys in the clubhouse, but they let him walk, and they didn't even make him an offer. When he came to San Diego, you talk to the East Coast media, the guys in Baltimore, Boston, of course, Boston hated him because they felt he ruined Dustin Pedroia's career. And Manny came here with an edge, and he still plays with an edge, but I think he's matured. I think he's kind of won a lot of people over here in San Diego. He's part owner of the San Diego FC soccer franchise. He's been very, very active with that. He's ingratiated himself into the San Diego community. And the bottom line, the guy's produced. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer, Brad. He really is. There's no doubt in my mind he's a great defender. You know, last year he got off to a slow start, still hit 29 homers, drove in over 100 runs. And whatever Manny says in that clubhouse goes. And if he's playing well, the Padres are probably going to have a very, very successful season.
Okay, where does Tatis fit into that equation too?
Oh, I think he's as exciting a player as you're going to see in baseball today. I mean, sure. The big thing with Fernando, you got to keep the guy on the field. I mean, I sit here having watched, you know, some of the greats. I mean, going back as a young boy, watching Willie Mays and Hank Aaron and, you know, you could Dave Parker, Willie Stargell, all those guys I grew up really, you know, idolizing. I watched Fernando Tatis Jr. when he's healthy and in that leadoff spot. That's the other thing. I think leading him off is key because he's a much better catalyst in the leadoff spot. He seems like he's more engaged. He likes to run. But, again, you got to keep him healthy. You keep him healthy, I'm going to tell you right now, he'll be the National League Most Valuable Player. If he plays 145 games this year, which would be a career high, he will be the National League Most Valuable Player. Not only that, he's worth the price of admission every night. I mean, if there's one guy you want to come see, it's Fernando Tatis Jr. Even when he strikes out, he does it with a little bit of a flair. But, I mean, he can go from first to third. He can hit an inside-the-park home runner. He could throw a guy out at third base. I mean, this guy can truly do it all.
You don't know what you're going to get with every at-bat, right? Like you said, it could be greatness on any given moment. And, you know, his adjustment to playing different positions, that was questioned, but that's worked out, right?
Yeah, well, you know, last year he missed some time with that hip injury, but the year before he made the transition from shortstop to right field, didn't only win a gold glove, he won the platinum glove. I mean, for the best fielder in the entire National League. And I mean, the guy just a really an amazing, amazing player. The problem is, you look at, on the back of his baseball card, he's had a hard time playing 120 games in a season.
Lee Corso retired today. I'm pivoting. So I was relieved, actually, to hear that Lee Corso was retiring. I see where people are very sad about this on the broadcast side. I felt like the last few years it was almost forced that we are not going to make a change because we're big bad ESPN and we can go out when we want to go out. And I don't know, felt uncomfortable at times, John. Where are you at on Corso retiring?
Well, first of all, I guess I'll probably get my day started a little bit earlier on Saturday because I was one of those guys, Brad. I'd normally get up about 7, you know, watch the show for a couple of hours. And my day, unless one of the grandkids were playing soccer, I didn't do anything until Lee Corso decided on what head he wanted to put on, okay? And I love Lee Corso, but I agree with you. I mean, it's actually been kind of painful because you don't know from one Saturday to the next how they were going to prop him up and to get him on screen for a few minutes. And, you know, I give Kirk Herbstreit a lot of credit. I think he really looked after Coach Corso. I was at Bible study this morning, and it popped up on my phone when I walked out. And, you know, I was bittersweet. I mean, I was sad. But I was happy because, you know what, I know it's probably been the biggest part of his life for many years, and it's going to be tough for him. I mean, like a lot of us that, you know, aren't doing it day to day, or, you know, you get up and you got that natural adrenaline going. He's going to be a little bit sad, but I'm sure they'll find a way to work in a few things here and there. But, you know, he had a great run, did him and Beano Cook. People remember Beano Cook. Those guys did a lot of. Those guys did a lot for college football. And, you know, I remember Lee Corso, Brad, and you're a little bit younger than me, but I went to the Holiday Bowl when he was the head coach of Indiana. And BYU had this field goal attempt with just seconds to go. And the guy shanked it. You couldn't have shanked it any worse, okay? And Lee Corso ran around the field doing the helicopter. Here's the head coach of Indiana. They win a bowl game, and he's running around the field doing the helicopter. And that was a great memory. But he's done a great job on TV, and I'm going to miss him. But I also want to salute him and wish him the best in retirement.
Yeah, I mean, it's – both of us doing this for as long as we've done it. So Hubie Brown signed off earlier this year. I loved having Hubie on. I always loved having Hubie on. Al McCoy was in his 90s when he retired with the Suns. Al's since passed on. You were around the great Jerry Coleman for many, 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 many years. And there's the longevity of broadcasters. Vin Scully would walk in and people would just drop in their tracks when he walked into the press box. But I think there's also this side of media companies saying, what else can we get out? How much can we squeeze out of the turnip? And I don't know. I'm happy for him. Like you said, this isn't a shot at him. It's just our industry, I think, wants to hang on to people because they see the financial reward for the company. And that's that. Anything else going on in your world today in terms of sports that is on your radar?
Things I had breakfast with a couple of guys today, and they're both big San Diego State basketball fans.
There's not that many of them.
The NIL.
Yeah.
I mean, the NIL, the only thing I can tell all your viewers out there, if you support Arizona State, Arizona, Grand Canyon, just keep writing checks so you can hopefully have a good basketball program, good football program, good volleyball program, whatever. You know, Brad, we already saw it in the NCAA. All four number one seeds made the Final Four this year. And you know what? I think that's going to become more of the norm.
Sure, sure, because they'll be able to pay more. And it's like Baylor. There's this. Everybody's excited, jumping up and down excited about Baylor and losing every last player on their roster. That's now the norm. Bobby Hurley has sat over here every year with "Hello, my name is" tags on the first. That is to be expected in this day and age of NIL. And I think for fans, John, that, you know, let's just go back. I'll throw a name at you. If Marshall Faulk had NIL, there's no way he finishes at San Diego State.
No, he plays right after the game. He runs up and down the field against Pacific. I'm sure his phone would have been ringing. And by the time he ran the ball his last time as a freshman, he'd be on his way somewhere else as a
Gone.
sophomore.
Gone. So nowadays, it's this player has been at this school, this school, this school. Now he's coming here. It's they've got the suitcase with all the stickers of the stops that they've had along the way.
Well, they're going to have a lot of alumni parties to go to in later years. But how about the guy from Tennessee? He was reportedly made 2.4 million. He wanted to raise and didn't go to practice, so they cut him. And now, I'm sure he'll eventually get a job somewhere, but he's not going to get the 4 million. It looks like a lot of guys are staying away from this guy and his father right now. What a knucklehead!
The number, I mean, it sounds like UCLA from all indications, and it'll be just north of $1 million, which is still $1 million. Our mutual friend Tommy Lugenbill put out a great note yesterday that there were 600 and no, it's over 3,000 names, but 600 alone yesterday that are in the portal. There's not even that many jobs, John.
Well, that's right, Brad. You know what? And I've talked to a lot of people. And by the way, Tommy's a great guy. A lot of your viewers may not know this, but he played freshman basketball for me at Torrey Pines, and know Tommy very, very well. Know mom and dad pretty well as well. But there are a lot of guys that go in the portal. And everybody, when whether it's spring practice or fall practice in basketball, if you're not number one on the depth chart, man, you're in the portal because of playing time. And if you have a good year, you're going to be in the portal because you figure you can get more money. I mean, these poor coaches, they work their tail off to get guys to help develop them. They develop them for bigger programs. I mean, it's a really disgraceful what's going on in college athletics right now. And the other thing, and one of the gentlemen brought up academics today at the breakfast table. I go, academics, that's about the fourth thing on the list. I mean, now these guys, and I've talked to Division I college basketball coaches, the first thing that they talk about when they don't meet with the player and the parent, they meet with their agent before they ever get to the player is, how much money is he going to make? I mean, that's where the conversation starts. It isn't talking about, oh, you've got a great program. We really want to develop under you. Joe is really excited about entering the business program here or the architectural program. How much money? That's all they care about. They don't care about academics because you know what? They're probably going to be at three or four different institutions before their career's over. But the other thing, and Tommy brought it up and you kind of alluded to it, there are a lot of guys that go into the portal. They never come out of the portal because some of them, especially in football, they probably shouldn't have been recruited as Division I players to begin with. And when they don't play, they still think they're a Division I talent, but they haven't developed, so they go back in the portal and they end up, either going back to junior college or going to Division II. So just going into the portal is not the final answer for a lot of those guys. They never come out of the portal.
I wish we had more time because you said something earlier that you were wrong on. You said the conversation starts with the money. What you didn't finish the thought on is it also ends with the money. There's no other conversations now, John.
Well, that's true.
It's just like there's nothing else that matters. What am I gonna make? And by the way, I got yelled at in practice today, so I'm gonna go in the portal. I got disrespected today. Yeah, you had to run stairs today. Whatever it is. So.
Yeah, Brad, it used to be, when kids come out of high school, they're the big fish in the little pond.
Yeah.
And everybody knows him on campus. All the girls bat their eyes at the guys. He's walking across campus with his Letterman jacket on. And then you go into a freshman year at college. You've been heavily recruited, and your position coach doesn't call you by your first name. He calls you Seth Matt. And even though you've got tape on your helmet with your name, some guys don't know who you are. You go back to your dorm. You've gotten your butt kicked in practice, and you got 3 hours of homework. It can be a very, very lonely experience for freshmen. And now a lot of these guys, they take the easy way out. They go somewhere else and want a fresh start. Well, I got news for you. The grass isn't always greener. How about staying, working hard, developing, and earn that number one spot?
Well, a couple things, and then I do have to go.
I'm fired up today, by the way.
I could tell. 10 cups of coffee, John Quintero. I like it. So the idea of the Cessmat name, I was always just referred to as "Hey, dumbass." Or there is the great Bruce Arians line, the great football coach, who referred to an offensive lineman as knee deep. And the offensive line is like, "What's knee deep?" Knee deep because my foot is up your ass, knee deep. There you go.
I got called a dummy hero one time in football practice because I knew a play was coming and I jumped up and batted the ball down. Offensive coordinator wasn't happy. Call me a dummy hero.
Dummy hero. Well, I'll let you go off that. I won't call you dummy hero. We should do this again.
Hey, look forward to it, Bradley, and keep it up, man. You're doing a hell of a job. Hear about it all the time.
Yeah, well, it's a mutual admiration society, so I'll let you go. That's John Quintera, the coach. You can find him on his YouTube channel and other streaming platforms. Next up, we go to Tucson. Jordan Hamm is at U of A football practice. He was at Arizona State yesterday. We'll go through the transfer portal for both the Wildcats and the Sun Devils. That's next. As promised, let's go to Tucson where Mr. Cool, look at you, Jordan Hamm. I mean, the sunglasses for a show appearance. That is...
I'm dealing with the sun out here. I'm out in the elements, okay?
Nothing else.
I could do one of these the entire time, but I figured the sunglasses were better.
You know what? When you're going to make a point, just pull them off like you're really cool. So you're in Tucson. I wanted to have you jump on board because the portal opened yesterday, Arizona State, U of A, and just what is going on with the portal when it involves the Sun Devils and the Wildcats? Who's leaving? Let's start first. Anybody out at U of A of note? Of note, Jordy?
Yeah, there have been a couple guys that have entered the portal since this spring reopening, but I feel like the bulk of the guys that were going to go have already gone. And you know, a lot of guys from the two deep that have moved on, have already jumped in the portal back in December. Now, some names to look out for: Traydon Stukes, Genesis Smith, Dalton Johnson. Those are all guys that everyone, U of A fans are kind of cautiously just like, I hope they forget that they can enter the portal again, you know, that sort of thing. But we haven't heard one way or the other whether those guys are going to stay or go. I think they're really trying to give this new defense a chance and see what's going on. But those are three names that I've heard from U of A fans about concern, although they are still here. And we haven't heard any indication that they're shopping around or anything like that. But Brad, as you and I know, like, these things can move quickly.
Yeah, yeah. It just takes the handler behind the team. Genesis Smith is a player who was at Hamilton High School. Mm-hmm. I've seen him play all the way back into junior high and have really admired how he's grown. If he did leave them, would it be a big blow or just... it's par for the course.
I think it'd be a big blow. He's a guy that even when it was a defensive backfield of Traydon Stukes and Gunnar Maldonado and Dalton, you know, those were some of the older guys. Genesis got some run as a sophomore on that Alamo Bowl team. And he played a lot last year. He was, I think, one of the few bright spots on defense. So if he were to go, you know, knowing how much eligibility he has left, the potential that he has left, him being an in-state guy, I think that definitely would be a big blow.
Jordan Hamm joins us. He's at Tucson today for U of A in spring ball. You were at Arizona State yesterday. Sun Devils, any shockers, any big surprises going into the portal?
I don't think so. A lot of the guys that we have seen, and I'd say there's about a half dozen now that have gone into the portal. Most of those guys are walk-ons, are guys that are maybe on the outside looking in on the two deeps. That sort of thing. Navi Brewson, obviously a great local story, you know, two-time Gatorade Player of the Year, state champion at Liberty. You know, Max Ware, who I think is a really nice wide receiver, is moving on. Those are the guys that in the previous era of college football, those are the types of players ASU and U of A should be taking flyers on. Yeah. Of talented guys, maybe the offer sheet isn't quite what they want it to be. So they say, hey, you're a local kid. Who knows? Maybe you can be the next Trenton Bourget if you pop. But the way that these things are changing and changing quickly about where the roster sizes are changing and everybody needs to be on scholarship, all of a sudden that means you need to get 15 to 20 guys off your roster. And that's kind of the harsh reality of college football right now. And Kenny Dillingham's been very vocal that, like, this is the least favorite part of my job. This is why I'm not in the NFL. Like, if I have to make a cut, usually it's because somebody made a mistake or somebody screwed up or, you know, that sort of thing. Not, I have to tell this kid that there's no room for you. That really sucks. So I have a feeling that those are the guys that would be maybe on the chopping block, and that's probably a bad way to put it, but those would be the guys that would be in consideration if they had to get the roster size down, and giving them an opportunity to go find a home and find a scholarship opportunity elsewhere. JP Dieter is a guy that was along the defensive line. He was having a really nice spring, but it felt like some of the younger guys that were coming in were just ahead of him on the depth chart. So it would be tough for him to maybe leapfrog some of those guys, but he provided some great depth. And like I said, felt like he was kind of coming into his own. So that's one to look out for. I think that he could find a power five landing spot that might work for him, work well for him. But yeah, it's been probably five or six names. Kenny's been pretty clear that they're not really looking to add a ton right now. It's kind of one of those, like, if there's a dynamic playmaker out there that we just can't say no to, that's who we're going to go after. And 2 years ago, he said something similar and they came away with Jordan Tyson. So who knows? There might be a Jordan Tyson sitting out there that they can go grab and say, maybe not this year, but he can help us down the line. But I think they're going to be pretty selective in this process.
What are you looking forward to, or what are you focusing in today in Tucson with U of A and Coach Brennan?
Yeah, I was here at the beginning of spring ball and just seeing the progress that's been made. There was a lot of talk of upping the tempo on offense. They're putting an emphasis on speed, making sure that they really can get Coach Daigie's offense up and running. And then on the defense, kind of what changes is Danny Gonzalez making to this defense? And, you know, I know they've had a ton of additions in the trenches on the offensive line, on the defensive line. So how is that, you know, kind of coming together? Obviously, you know, some days these guys are still in basketball shorts, so we can't exactly see, you know, all of the progress, but are we seeing some more cohesion now that it feels like Coach Brennan's really able to put his fingerprints on this program, where last year it was, they were more playing defense, trying to box out other schools from trying to nab their guys in the transfer portal, that they didn't really get to instill the culture that really fits them. This offseason, it feels a little bit different, where they're really able to do things on and off the field to really make it a Coach Brennan type program.
Good stuff there, Jordan. Safe travels. Thanks. It's Jordan Hamm down in Tucson today at U of A, covering both Arizona State and the Wildcats. We're back with more after this timeout.